Chris Hodges is a professor emeritus at Harvard University. Donald Schoen of MIT died in the late 1980s, and they came up with a framework called the theory of action perspective. I'm going to talk about that perspective and show you how this case was an example of that, and then how you can use this case in your own recruiting. Oh, thank you. And how many of you have computers? Everybody, right? And in your computers, whether it's a Mac or whether it's a Windows system, everything is connected to everything, right? So if you're in Microsoft Word and you make a spell change, it's going to make a change in Excel spreadsheet, right? Yes? Everybody agree with that? Okay. Now, some of you in this room are old enough to remember the 386. Remember the 386 machines?
You're looking at me. I remember all of them.
Okay. 360. Yep. The 386 looks like today's desktop. It's got a screen. It's got a box. It's got a hard drive. But it was based on more of a more limited version of Windows. And the way in which that machine was organized, that if you were working in Microsoft Word, you were working in Microsoft Word. Any changes you made in Word, there was in Word. As a matter of fact, if you wanted to get an Excel spreadsheet, you had to get out of Microsoft Word to get into. Do anybody remember those days?
Okay.
Right, it didn't multitask. Now, here's what Argyris says. Suppose the brain is designed like a 386 Windows machine. You have a hard drive called your brain. And you may have a program in your brain. And one of those programs in your brain is called my espoused theory. This is what I really believe about myself. I'm trustworthy, kind, loyal, brave, clean, thrifty, reverent. And if you brought in somebody with a lie detector machine, I would absolutely pass. I also treat everybody with respect, and I have an open door policy. I sincerely do. And if you interviewed me and you asked me what kind of manager I am, I would tell you all those things. I would look you right in the eye, and I would believe every word I said. And I'd be so genuine, you'd actually believe me. Now, I have another theory. I have another program in my head. This is what I actually do. Now, physically, the programs could be side by side, like on a hard drive. But the structure of the brain is, in order to get into the program that tells me what I do, I have to decouple the theory, the program that tells me what I believe. Argyris calls this espoused theory versus theory in use. So the implication of what Argyris is saying is we all experience the feeling that everybody in the world seems to be a hypocrite except you and me, and sometimes I'm not sure about you. Because we see the gap between what people say to our faces and what they do. And Argyris is saying it's not hypocrisy. It's the structure of the human brain. That in order to do things, they have to uncouple their values. And it's a separate thing. Which is why, traditionally, job interviews are notoriously poor predictors of future performance. How many of you have ever hired somebody who looks so good in the job interview and turns out their only job qualification is that they could do a job interview well? Okay? And that's what Argyris is saying.
I've been on the other end, Larry.
Yeah. So the technique that I took you through is the following. We created a case. And the case is a dilemma. Not a problem. Most managers are trained to be problem solvers. As a matter of fact, if you wake most managers in the United States up in the middle of the night and say, what are you most proud of as a business person? They say, I'm a great problem solver. A dilemma is a different situation. A dilemma is a choice between two or more things, and they're all bad. If you don't understand what a dilemma is, talk to President Obama. That's what he's faced with every day. He has got all options and none of them are good. Those are dilemmas. The dilemma in the case is you don't want to fire somebody whose sin is that they tried to save a life. And you don't want to do nothing about somebody who's violated company policy and then claims they'll violate it again. How are you going to do that? That's a dilemma, not a problem. How do you manage that? So the first thing I did was I asked you to read the case. The second thing I did, I said, what's going on here? And then I said, and now I'm going to be Mary. And I, by the way, I have a tape recorder, and I'm going to tape record what you say. And then I go click. Now, in Peter's case, he was a very bad subject because he actually said exactly what he said he would do, which would make him a very good hire. But in many cases, as soon as people see the tape recorder and I go click, what happens is, according to the arduous theory, is they move from espoused theory to theory in action. And they actually tell you what they would do as opposed to what they say they would do. So this is a very simple technique that you can use. If any of you would like, I have more cases. I have references to the theory. You can use this in your own job interviews.
I'll give you
a real example. I was hiring a director of human resources for a company that's located south of Boston. The culture of the company is very much, we're family. We treat everybody with respect. And the human resources person is the symbol of how we do that. The case that we created was as follows. Phil has a brother who owns an eyeglass store called Larry's Eyeglass Store. And he is willing to give employees of the company a 30% discount and put a coupon that says, your company and Larry's Eyeglass Store offers this discount for all employees. Turns out, most of the employees, because of the location, live in the Rhode Island area, and Larry's Eyeglass Store happens to be located in Quincy. Okay? How are you, you're the human resources person, and Phil the employee gives you the, now I go to the president and I say, here's the case, what do you want the HR person to do? And he says, this is a simple case, I want the HR person to thank Phil, I want the HR person to say we're going to circulate this around. That's a C-level answer. A B-level answer is, I want the HR person to be aware that most of our employees won't take advantage of this by going to Quincy and find a similar organization, an eyeglass store in Rhode Island that would offer the same deal. Now, the company also has Silicon Valley offices, and an A-level answer is to get the same thing in Silicon Valley. That's all he wanted, right? I give the case to HR people. They read the case. They tell me, I would thank Phil. I would tell them, absolutely. And then I show them a tape recorder. I say, okay, now I'm going to tape record you doing this. All you have to do is do what you just said you were going to do. Click. Immediately, I get people going into their HR logo. In one situation, instead of saying, thank you very much, Phil, they said, thank you very much, Phil. We now have to investigate to see if 30% is a competitive rate. Thank you very much, Phil. We have to take this to our attorneys to make sure that there's no conflict of interest. In other words, you know how the typical HR thing, they went immediately into their HR speak. Just by seeing the tape recorder. So that's an example. Anyway, if you'd like copies of these plus other cases, just let me know. If any of you'd like to stretch and stand up, I don't know, because you've been sitting for a while. Anybody want to stand up? Just okay. All right, after retained search, let's talk about retained search. What's been, again, I define retained search as when you pay a certain percentage of the search, whether or not the search is done or not, as opposed to contingency, which you only pay if it's successful. Any of you have ever used retained search? Any of you ever had experiences with retained search? Okay, what was your experiences? Either as a user or a candidate?
Well, today we go to LinkedIn.
Okay, so you don't use search?
Well, we use search on the web increasingly. You
know? Right.
Some instances, you know, third-party organizations are good.
Yeah, what I'm talking about is the third-party organization that's doing that for you as opposed to you doing it. Okay, if you have any experience, let's talk about the industry. Again, there's three ways you can find people. You can do it yourself, do it in-house, go to a contingency firm or placement organization. This is like putting a house on multiple listings and saying, you know, you, the first one of you that finds me the right person gets the 33% salary. So that's contingency. That's like multiple listings. And then finally is retained, which is I'm only going to one firm. I'm going to pay you a third of the fee up front, whether or not you're successful or not. That's retained search. Why would people do that? The first is confidentiality. If I'm going to be doing this with a contingency firm, the contingency people don't really do a very good job of confidentiality. Search firms typically will not disclose the names of their client. There may be a situation where I'm planning to fire you, but I'm not going to do it until I've got your replacement in the wings. So I need to keep this in a confidential way.
Go ahead.
Next is a transparent process. Let's say I have a board of directors and it's a public company. I want to make sure that every step of the way it was transparent and we can disclose the process, as opposed to actually we had a board meeting and we said, who do we know at the golf club or the Rotary that we trust? And we just went to the Rotary and that, voila. And finally, most important is the word poaching. I will use a retained search firm because I want to poach somebody from another industry. Let's go back to this case. Let's assume there's an industry, and I assume there is an industry, of companies that provide lifeguards and pool maintenance people for municipalities and beaches. There probably is an association. And probably Jeff Ellis is in the association, and he knows the CEOs of the other associations. Who does he want to recruit for this president COO role? Somebody from that association. He's got to poach somebody. But he doesn't want to be accused of poaching. So he uses a third party to do the poaching. In a similar way, if you're practicing in a hospital, all the CEOs are members of the Mass Hospital Association. They see each other all the time. I'm looking for a CFO. I want somebody who's a CFO of another hospital about my size in Massachusetts. I want to poach that person, but I don't want to be perceived as poaching the person. So that's why I would pay the money for a retained search. But companies want to poach, but they don't want to be poached. So what they do is they will say, I will use you, Stiebel Peabody, but then if I use you, you have to sign a no poaching agreement. You can't approach anybody in my company for the next 2 years. So in other words, I want to poach, but I don't want to be poached. Now, 50% of the searches in the United States are done by one of five firms: Heidrick & Struggles, Korn Ferry, Russ Reynolds, and I forgot who else it is. 50% of the firms are done by small boutiques like me. Here's the problem. The large firms have the name brand recognition, but often clever firms create no poaching moats. So if you've got a firm as big as TD Bank, instead of using one search firm, you might use all five of the largest firms at different times, have each of them sign a no poach agreement so that they can't poach any of the TD Bank North people. You had a situation like this with HP several years ago. They were looking for a new CEO, and all of the large big five had no poaching agreements with all the major high-tech companies. And so they had to go to a firm my size to find a CEO for HP. The industry structures, there are about 5,000 firms. The five big ones have the best brand names. But it's often brand names versus trust. People will use these large firms because of the brand name. People will use a small boutique firm because I know Larry, I trust Larry, he knows me. So that's the issue. LinkedIn, you mentioned, someone here mentioned LinkedIn. It's a phenomenal tool. And one of the things it's done is it's leveled the industry. 15, 20 years ago, only the big five firms in the industry could say, we have a database of millions of people who are not looking for jobs, so we can poach them. Today, any boutique firm could say, hey, I got a database of millions of people too. So years ago, one of the big firms could say, hey, look, we have a name brand. Everybody recognizes our brand. People will take our calls because our name is recognized. Guess what? With the erosion of company loyalty, even a small, you may not have heard of Stiebel Peabody or Mutt and Jeff, but every recruiter with an IQ of 85, every executive with an IQ of 85 or over is going to take a recruiter's call. So that is gone. So size of a search firm can be both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in the sense of brand recognition. It's a curse in that the smart firms create a moat against the large firms. Here's the problem with search. It doesn't work. Heidrick & Struggles did a study of 2,000 executives that they placed in companies. And turns out, after 18 months, 60% are still with the company. 40% are gone. How long would you be in business if you said, actually 60% of the loans that we make are paid off? How long would you have been in business if you said, I want you to engage me to be your surgeon. 60% of my patients survive.
That isn't payable. This
is the problem. It doesn't work. You couldn't run a business if the quality of your, if you publicly said that 40% of the time it's not going to work. It's the classic model for retained search has failed. Again, if any of you would like to see a copy of the study that Heidrick & Struggles did, this is where it is. Ask me for these PowerPoints. I'll give you the PowerPoints, and you can. It has the web, the URL. If any of you would like a copy of the arduous material, again, it's on the PowerPoints. Here's another problem with search. It's a transactional service. How many of you are in transactional businesses? Well, you are. Anybody, who else is? You were. It's, surgery is transaction. You are. Well, search is a transactional business. And the idea is, the problem with search is that it is search. It's about rapidly finding new leaders for companies and then moving on. Then you take a transactional business and you make it a public company, now you've got transactions squared. I think this is one of the reasons why Eastern Bank wants to remain a non-public company, a mutual bank, to avoid that transactional mentality that so affects public company banks.
Can you explain that a little bit more, transactional?
Well, here's what it means, is once the person starts work, I'm through, right? You hired me to do a search. Search is over. I go on to my next search. I get paid every time a search is done. That's the transaction. The problem is, what you're really paying for when you're the company is a smooth leadership change, not search. Search is only part of what you really want to achieve. You want it to be a smooth leadership change. Here's the difference. Traditional search is very loaded on the front end of the search. In other words, the database, the job descriptions, they do very poorly on the back end, which is the onboarding. But the real value today is the back end, the onboarding, and they're not doing anything about that. And that's the problem with search. It's a search when companies should be looking for smooth leadership change. That's a different search, that's a different service. We have if any of you are interested, we have a framework called Platform for Success, which is an onboarding program. You can read it. It gives the structure of what we do. You can do that yourself. What are the recommendations that I make for you if you are companies that are looking to get talent into your companies? Again, you would only use retained search under one condition. It needs to be a confidential search. Nobody else needs to know you're doing, and you're looking to poach some people. For example, I'm making this up, but it gives you a flavor. I've been hired by a company that makes Greek food, and it's in the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area. It's an ethnic food. They manufacture it and they sell it in supermarkets. They're looking to get a new CEO, and they're looking for a CEO in the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area who has experience in ethnic foods. Guess what? Everybody knows everybody in that industry. It's just like we all live in small industries and everybody knows everybody. So you need a third party to poach. And that's what we do. First is, don't ask for search. If you ask for search, you'll get search. Search is defined as rapidly and efficiently finding a new talent for your needs. What you're looking for is a smooth leadership change, which is not only retained search, but some sort of onboarding to make the transition smooth. And you want to pay the same fee as search alone. The second is, the person who did the search should also do the onboarding. Because if you hired somebody to do the search and they've done a good job, they get to know you, the company, and the ethics of your company and the culture of the company. So the person who did the search should also be doing the onboarding. Now, this is inside baseball, but the traditional warranty that search makes is, if the person is not on the job, should leave for any reason, gets fired or quits, 9 months or 12 months after we do the search, we will do the replacement for free. That's our warranty to you. And I'm saying you're being snookered by that. That's a bad warranty. The warranty you really want is predictive validity. And predictive validity is the following. I warrant that at the 1 year anniversary, when this person gets their performance appraisal, their overall evaluation will be meets job expectations or higher. If it's lower than meets job expectations, I failed. I'm willing to do the search again. That's a higher standard than, is the person physically on the job? Again, you should insist on a higher standard of warranty than what you're getting. So, to summarize, We went on a Hallandale Beach case to give you an idea of what the arduous technique is like. We talked about the difference between espoused theory, what I say, and theory in use, what I do. We looked at the search industry, and my conclusion is that the search industry as it currently is doesn't have much of a future. And I've sketched out what you as a consumers of search ought to be looking for in the companies that you hire for search. Search has a valuable, limited role in your talent management tools when you're looking to hire somebody on a confidential basis and poach somebody from within the industry. Let me stop here. Any questions? Any question?
What about psychological testing? How do you feel about that?
I'm a psychologist, so I'm biased in favor of psychological testing. Many of the paper and pencil tests, however, can be figured out by anybody of reasonable IQ. So not all the tests on the market are going to be good. So you have to think it through carefully. There's a lot of invalid tests out there.
Any tests of preference? I mean, I think
that's
Myers-Briggs.
Myers-Briggs is an example of an invalid test.
It's an invalid test?
Invalid.
Every time I take it, I get a different result.
I rest my case. As a general rule, what I did with you is considered a test. It's called a projective test. It has the advantage of having what's called face validity. If you're ever brought into court by saying, you know, this was discrimination, I should have been hired, used an invalid test, you just show the judge this case, and it has so much validity relative to the job, it'll pass muster. If I give a Myers-Briggs as a test for employment, it won't pass muster. It doesn't meet standards of validity. It doesn't meet standards of reliability. It's also so, I mean, look, anybody who looks at the questions of the Myers-Briggs, let's say you're looking for a sales guy, and there are questions of the Myers-Briggs that are trying to tap what's called introversion versus extroversion. Are you so stupid you can't figure out what I'm looking for when I'm asking questions about introversion versus extroversion for a sales job? Come on. You should be able to fake that well. So it's be careful of paper and pencil tests. I prefer projective tests. Any other questions?
Do you work in the other side?
We offer career management services, and again we've been in business since 1979, and when we do searches, we are so narrowly focused because of the assignments. You know, find me someone in the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area that has experience in the ethnic food manufacturing business. The probability that we happen to be dealing with somebody like that is very small. So we've never had a conflict of interest. If we did, we would disclose the conflict of interest.
But what if you had a successful person who is a banker?
Yeah.
And they've always wanted to run a gourmet Greek falafel.
Okay.
I mean, do you help them? Do people come to you for that kind of change?
Yes.
Always people searching for someone who fits their mold.
Yes, people will come. In that specific, I'll give you an example of what we've actually done. It was somebody from the banking industry during a time of consolidation in banks, and this person was from a C-level kind of bank. And he was VP of commercial lending. And he said, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm never going to be a banker again. So we gave him a series of tests of career interest and ability and competence. And one of the things in the testing, it showed that he liked the outdoors. And he said, well, that's not surprising. I grew up on a farm. I've always been outdoors. One of the things I liked about being a commercial lender is I'm constantly out of the office. So yeah, that makes sense. So I said, well, that's the Rosetta Stone. Whatever you do, it's got to be either in the outdoors or with people who love the outdoors. So to make a long story short, he now owns a John Deere distributorship. And he's happy.
Isn't that the battle, to be happy in your work?
Right. But I couldn't recommend him to my client, the Greek food company, without my client saying, "Are you nuts?" So we have to find. It's usually very separate issues. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Larry, before you sit and eat, in appreciation from our club to you for coming to present to us today, we're going to donate 20 vaccines to eradicate polio in the world.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, everybody, this concludes our meeting for today. Like I said, stick around for the governor's breakfast committee.